So this is going to be the second part then of Jill's story. Last time we did the Shelley, grandparents, and today we're going to have a look at the Lee side, Jill's father's side. So you were just saying that you used to ask your father to paint a picture of what it was like when he was a child.
Well, as far back as I can remember, he always came up and told me a story. And the stories that I liked best were what happened when he was a child.
Hmm.
And I found it so different because he came from the Edwardian era, which was vastly different to where I was in the 1930s. And he not only told me the stories of them, and told me the names, but he drew pictures, which really stuck in my memory. So if I can remember any of it, I think he had a very bad time of it as a small child because he was a chronic asthmatic and wasn't easy to treat. And he didn't actually go to school till he was about 7. Now his father taught him at home and taught him Latin and Greek very early, and that is why he understood. If you asked him the names of flowers, he didn't say what a primrose, he came out with a Latin name. And if you went into churches, he understood exactly what all the things were written on the walls. I didn't, but he did. And it was all instilled into him. And the fact, I think, too, that he went to Manchester Grammar School later, where they also taught him the classics in those days, which was a very, very good school and still is to this day.
So at home, when he was being taught by his father, was where, did you know?
Yes, it was Rochdale.
Mm.
In his father's house, which included the surgery. And the
surgery was in the house?
In the house.
Oh, right.
It was a very big house. They were several stories high. Mm. And they also had a pharmacy there. You know, they had to make most of their own medicines in those days.
Mm.
Which he and his sisters used to have to partly make up and take round to for people that couldn't get in. There was the beginning of pharmacies then, but there weren't that many. And I doubt there'd have been very much in that area. So they had to very much make up their own medicines. But it was a very large household because there were 8 surviving children, and there was a cook, 2 housemaids called Big Aggie and Little Aggie, also what they called a boot boy, who cleaned all the shoes, which were laid out in rows.
That was his only job, to just keep...
No, he also groomed the horse, which took my grandfather on his rounds, because they didn't have a car in those days.
Mm.
I don't know what they called it. I don't know what it would have been, a small conveyance of some sort.
Mm.
But he had to look after the horse and take him round as a chauffeur. And it was quite a busy life, I would think. And I think probably all the odd jobs that everybody else didn't want to do. And of course, there'd be the odd person who would come in and do what they called the rough work. But my grandmother would have to have catered for an enormous family, including the servants.
This is Matilda, or otherwise known as Tilly.
So it would have been a vast operation. So that all the girls were taught to run house and to cook and to sew and to, generally do everything that was supposed to be done.
So who were the girls in the family then?
Edna was the eldest, who subsequently married grandfather's partner, who was younger, of course. There was a very aristocratic lady. I loved her, though. Very much the old school. And she had 3 children. One of them became a doctor, a very good one too, and whose son became a famous gynecologist eventually. In
who was that?
George Normand. Mm.
Oh, really?
And his son.
Mm.
What was his name now? Tony.
Mm-hmm.
And he became very well known. And his other son became a barrister, who my father was very fond and looked after when he came to do his training in London. And a daughter who had a very sad life, Joyce, lost her fiancé in the First World War. And she had somebody in the Second World War who went off and married somebody else. And they were a lovely family. And then there was the next girl was Florence, who was very studious and became a governess. Because there's one of the few things that girls could do in those days. There weren't many things you could do that were considered the right thing. She married a gentleman who eventually owned a huge business in the north, the equivalent of Lyons down here. Can't think of the name right now.
Well, a sort of corner house type thing, restaurant.
Well, not really. It was slightly better class than that. Can't remember the name of it now. That's one thing I can't remember now.
We'll find that, I expect.
Duncan and Foster's.
All right.
That's it. And he became a millionaire. He was my godfather. And all I can remember was going to see him and having very slippery leather armchairs, which he slid off. And he always called me 2 jewels, 1 pint. He used to give me most fantastic presents, like a whole doll's tea set and lovely things like that, until he died, sadly. And they had 2 sons who were great leg pullers, do the most dreadful things.
Right.
Yeah, Charlie and Ernie. Charlie went to what's the name of the Air Force place? Farmer, is it? Became something to do with the quite a high powered job in to do with that. But they did the most dreadful things when they were young. Played the most terrible tricks, much to their mother's horror. And one particular day, my Aunt Edna was there, who everybody revered, and they didn't know that wanted to play a trick, not on her, but somebody else, I don't know who. And she went into the loo, pulled the paper, and a huge snake flew out.
What, a real snake?
No.
I don't know.
She'd picked it in there, right. So this thing nearly gave her a heart attack. If you went there, your shoes were stuffed with paper when you went to put them on. And we put a fender in my father's bed. And he had a habit of leaping into bed, and only that one was there. It's fender. He all seemed to have a rather strange sense of humour. His 2 brothers, who became medical students, got into awful trouble because they had a skeleton to work on, as they did. And there was a nice new little housemaid came, very quiet, up in the top. What did they do? Put it in her bed. A torch. When she put the bed, there was this awful skeleton. There was apparently a scream that could be heard all around Manchester.
Oh, my goodness.
And I was absolutely furious and immediately knew who the culprits were. And they must have got the most awful telling off.
Did the maid come back?
I don't know what happened to the maid, but you may remember grandpa's had a very authoritative voice, apparently. Charles, Harry, downstairs this instant. Playing tricks. But to go back to Auntie Flora, she had a lovely home in red roof, in a very posh part of Manchester. I can't remember right now. Very sedate.
Stockport area or somewhere, was it?
No, it was further over than that. Cheshire River, actually. Mm. And the next daughter was Edith, who we all call Nini, who was the most wonderful character.
Why did she get called Nini?
Anne, my sister Anne, couldn't say Edith, and she called her Nini, and it stuck.
It stuck, yeah.
Mm. Huh. She was a great person, she was.
Mm.
And married a very nice man, George Hessel at the time.
Hesselgrave.
Yeah. He was lovely.
So what was his trade?
It's something to do with manufacturing things, because that's how he ultimately died, because he was fire watching during the Second World War, and he watched his whole factory go up in smoke.
Gosh.
There was nothing he could do about it, and it so upset him. I think there might have been problems with the insurance. He got pleurisy and died at the age of 54.
Oh dear.
It was tragic.
Yeah.
But she was a redoubtable character. She took her widowhood in her stride, and having been pretty well off all her life, she was left to make her own way, and she certainly did. She sort of helped everybody in the family.
So losing the factory and everything, he basically lost everything then, didn't he? Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, they rented the house in Barnet, High Barnet, until they were waiting to sort of settle in the south. And so, of course, the house went, everything went, and he left. And so she became, at various times, a housekeeper to various strange people, until her daughter, Barbara, who was by then a nurse, or sister eventually, took her with her. I always remember her as such a strong character, you know.
Oh, yes.
Amazing little lady. And the next one, I think, was my favourite, was Auntie Dora, who apparently Aunt Edith used to have to, when they were courting, because her husband, Joseph, was also in manufacturing. For some peculiar reason, Grandpa didn't think that was quite the thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in those days, he didn't think trade was quite the thing. Aunt Edith had to go out with Dora, and then they'd meet in this park, and then she'd go off and leave them to themselves. It was very peculiar about what people were doing. They made a very happy marriage, and he also made an awful lot of money. Especially during the Second World War, because he made the overcoats for the army. Auntie Dora was such fun. When I knew her, she must have been 50s and 60s, and she was just so lovely with us young people. A little bubbly person with dimples.
Did they stay up in the north of England then?
No, they went to Leicester.
Oh, right, yeah.
And his house is almost identical to Pat and John's. Exactly the same, like it's like walking into their house, it's extremely tidy.
Yeah, yeah. So a new house, then 30s or 1930s house.
Beautiful. Tennis court.
Lovely.
And an allotment as well, because wartime everybody grew everything. I had many happy holidays there. It's great fun.
Edith lost an eye at some stage, didn't she?
When she was a little girl, she was playing in the nursery, and the nurse was sewing, and she tripped or something, and the needle went and destroyed the cornea of her eye. And there was nothing they could do about it. And they wouldn't be able to do anything about it even now.
Even living in a surgery.
All her life with one eye, and you would never have known. And if she sometimes came on the wrong side of her, she wouldn't hear you for a minute. But she lived very bravely with that.
Yeah.
Even, the fact that her father was a doctor didn't do any good and could do nothing for her.
No, it's sort of tragic, that.
Tragic, wasn't it? And Gladys was the last daughter. She was also a very nice lady. And that he nearly wrote that wedding off because he was a commercial traveller. And that was just the lowest of low.
Right, that's the famous Uncle picture Harry. Of you all, isn't it?
Yes. Auntie Gladys was the tallest. Yeah. She was a very tall lady, and her husband was short and round. And my father said he had to stand on the stool to kiss her. They didn't seem to be very happy, so.
Yeah, yeah.
And we had three children. The boys were lovely. Geoffrey and Peter both went in the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not quite sure whether Geoffrey was a prisoner of war. I think he possibly was,
mm-hmm.
but he died quite young.
Mm-hmm.
Peter was great fun. And when my sister Anne was born, I went up north to stay with them, and I'd never been up north before.
Mm-hmm.
And once I got used to the strange way of speaking, the first thing they said to me was, "Come along in, love. You must be snatched." And I thought, snatched. I haven't been snatched. And what they meant was I was cold and right. hungry, you know.
I've heard that expression snatched, before. Yeah.
I got used to it. And of course it was wonderful to be being an only child, to be with the family with my cousin Barbara, and two boys and a girl as well. I had an absolute whale of a time.
So was this the same house in Rochdale?
This was the last home of my grandfather, which was a very big double-fronted Victorian house, and the two families were able to live there quite happily. And we had vast cellars, they were whitewashed out, and the washing was done. They had great rollers and things for. It was absolutely like a factory down there. the washing was absolutely fantastic. And great ranges in the kitchen, and it was a fantastic place to be. And Barbara and I were up in the attics. But I think the funniest story was when I wasn't there, but it was Christmas time, and my cousin Barbara related to me how the two boys were lying in bed waiting for Father Christmas, and Geoffrey said very scornfully, "Of course it's not Father Christmas at all, it's Daddy." Now, Daddy was the short, stout one, but Barbara's father was tall, very tall and slim. So they, Uncle George overheard them on the stairs, so he said to Harry, "I'll be Father Christmas tonight." He managed to get into the outfit and went upstairs as due with the things, crept into the room, and the two boys were waiting for them, and Jenny was ready to say, "See." And then all he said was, "Oh, heck, it isn't." And he could hardly get out of the room for 5 minutes to laugh. It's a sanitary lesson, that one, in not being cynical about things. Oh, dear. I did have fun up there. I really did. Played things like they called it rubbers and cups. Mm. What is rubbers and cups? And it was rubbers and cups.
Cups.
Completely alien to me. And great fun.
So Edith kept her accent, didn't she?
Oh, yes.
Because she always said yee all the time, didn't she? But your father didn't at all. There's no trace of any northern accent.
No, hardly ever. No, he went down to the south of 20.
Oh, right, yeah.
And he didn't have much love for the north, really. He only went back if he had to. He preferred it, but.
So when you went visiting there, was Edmund your grandfather, was he still alive then? So he died in...
No, he died.
1939, maybe even.
Well, I was soon after I went. I must have been about just 4 or 5 before he died. I know it's when we lived at Woking. I remember Father having to go. That's one of the times he did have to go back up because of that.
Did you say you did meet him just once then?
I met him once. Mm. I was with him up when he was very ill.
Mm.
And he was, I was ushered to this room with a male nurse in a white coat. And he had not a wheelchair, but a bath chair.
There's a wheel on the front.
Made of
wicker.
Yeah. And a rug over his knees. His enormous beard. And I remember him patting me on the head and looking up at my father and smiling and saying, "Ah, this is George's little girl." He hadn't seen me.
Right.
My mother has strange feelings about her when she went up there, because being 20 years younger, he looked at this young flippity bit and said, "What on earth has George got?" She quite put her off the first morning. Came down to breakfast and grandfather said to her, "Good morning, Maud."
Maud?
So many different.
Oh, dear.
Coming in, she didn't try and like being called Maud. I think he thought, coming from this what they thought was rather bohemian sort of arty family, that he'd done the wrong thing,
So they kind of met up through the painting things, I suppose. So they're through the art world. Joan and George.
They met. My father was actually Grandpa Shelley's friend.
Oh right, yes, yeah.
And so he would have been a little bit older, not much.
Yes, I'm sorry, you explained that last time. It's Frank Shelley and who you went off painting together sometimes?
Yes. Yes. They were great friends in London. And it so happened that my mother had broken up with her boyfriend at the time, called Billy Rowe.
Billy Rowe?
Yeah, he has red hair,
right.
Apparently. And my father jumped in.
Right.
It was a strange situation to have your mother-in-law only 2 years younger than you.
Yes, yes, he'll be. Yeah.
Of whom he was extremely fond.
Well, let's just kind of. We've introduced Edmund, and you just remember him saying one word to you. He was obviously a man of some importance then. In that area, being a doctor, a surgeon, I think.
Yes, at the Manchester Infirmary as well, which must have been quite frightening in those days when you think what surgery was like in those days.
Yes, yeah.
Horrific, really. But he had this admirable quality that he wanted to use his skills for the good of the people who couldn't afford medicine. Usually wasn't possible to have. And he always held that as an ideal.
Well, it was decades before national health schemes.
Goodness, yes.
Mm.
And it didn't rub off too well on his two sons, which disgusted my father, because he'd always instilled into them this thing. And one went to, not quite an ordinary one, to Mostyn, but should have been a vet and not a... He didn't have any patience with people at all. Mm. But animals he was wonderful with. It would have been better to have been a vet. But the other, that's Donald's father.
Uh-huh.
But Charlie, who he idolised as a child, went into a very wealthy area in Cheadle and married what my father said was the most awful wife. Extremely fat. She looked like the... and Alice through the looking glass.
Oh, right.
Enormous woman, covered in rings, and he couldn't bear her.
What was her name?
Mabel.
Mabel, right,
And she wanted him to go to a district where he made a lot of money. And as long as it was not how he was brought up. He said, in fact, she'd made him into what he called a poodle dog. He was such a lovely young man. Just changed him.
So just recap for a moment. So that we had the girls. The boys. So who was the eldest boy?
Harry.
Harry. Yeah.
and then Charlie.
And
then
Charlie.
There was another boy, but he died.
Right.
About 4 or 5, something like that.
Mm.
No, wait a minute. Yes, that's right. And there was a boy before Edna, and he died. Mm. As children very often did in early infancy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also called Edmund, I think. But I think my father had a very interesting life because he, when he rightly said, well, did he want to be a doctor? No, he didn't. Although, in my opinion, he'd have made a very good one.
Yeah.
We always went to him if anybody fell over or anything. It was my father you went to. And he wanted to know what to do for everything.
Mm-hmm.
His father had always wanted to be an engineer.
Mm.
And so he decided to that's what he would do. And my father was not good at mathematics.
Mm.
And he didn't have a clue about machinery. And he was so miserable. And he always wanted to draw and paint.
Mm.
So he ran away.
All right.
To London.
Well, that's a very brave thing to do.
Yes. And his father came down shortly after, and he actually made very quite good. He did freelance illustrative work.
Mm.
But his first experience, he couldn't find anywhere to live, and somebody let him sleep in a shop window.
Right.
In the Fulham area.
Yeah.
Or would it be in Chelsea? And he had very little money, which is typical of him. Instead of buying food, he would buy books.
Right.
And he accumulated the most enormous collection of books, eventually.
Mm.
But he tells me lovely stories of when he was first in the studio. And there was a shop in the road called Woof. There were three shops called Woof, Spittle and Bang. And the studio that he eventually had was haunted.
Right.
And when he said he was going to take it, his friend said, you don't go there. Everybody, if you see the ghost, you die. Everybody had died. And it was a strange, as there's a lot of the as Chelsea flats are, it was one with a tree growing right up through the middle. And he had a staircase going up, which seems to suggest that the house at one time was all in one.
Right.
So yeah, the staircase went somewhere, but this didn't go anywhere. It just ended at the top of the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just sitting quietly painting one night when he was aware of something looking at him.
Mm.
And he was this very small man on the stairs looking at him. And he said, it didn't frighten me. He said, I said, did you want something?
Mm.
And the figure looked at me very hard and disappeared up the stairs and disappeared. So I thought, well, I don't know. And I said, well, that's probably, but he lived to
56,
so yeah. He managed to outstare the ghost. And he says he swears that he saw it.
Yeah.
And the description of it was much the same as.
So as you say, this is in Chelsea, Fulham area?
Chelsea. Mm.
Yeah, do you know where it actually was, the studio?
I don't know where he originally was. Probably would have been very small, one room in a, okay. But he had a terrible attack of asthma there, a really bad one.
Mm.
And his father came down and looked after him.
Right.
And he became, completely reconciled to the fact that's what he wanted to do.
His blessing, yeah.
Unfortunately, he just got really started and doing well. And the First World War.
Yeah.
So off he went to become a medical orderly, which he got a medal about that I didn't know about.
Yeah.
Years and years and years later.
Yeah.
And came back from there and decided it's going to be very difficult. So he took a teaching degree and ultimately went to a teacher's training college in London, a college being called Mahjong. It's at St. Mark and St. John's, and it's still there to this day.
That's a good place to stop for the moment, because we're just running out of time, but we can start a new recording.